Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective. They post episodes on Monday and Thursday mornings, bright and early. The latest one discusses how teams' playoff standings could affect player decisions regarding opting out of playing at Disney World. Be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective now, as well as the right time, wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, Cam Newton is really going to Boston. DeSean Jackson, I don't know what the hell he's thinking. And your voicemails on that time you accidentally wound up in a bad neighborhood. But first... All right, so went on vacation last week. Gabe, good to see you. I can see you. They can't see you. They can only hear you, but good to see you again. You know, you were busy working on some stuff. I tried to get my chill on, was working on a freelance project, you know, doing a few things. But right before I left, the last thing I did before I left for vacation, or the last thing you saw that I did before I left for vacation, was I did a parting shot for Outside the Lines about the football team in Washington. And the point that I was making at the time was that everything that's changing in the world right now, right? Everything that we're seeing flip up. Dan Snyder still had not changed the name of that football team. And if in this time he did not change the name of the football team, this would basically cement what his ultimate legacy was going to be as the owner of this team. And the way I put it in that parting shot was, he will go down just like George Preston Marshall, the first owner of the team, went down as, I think this is a direct quote, the steward of a team that was better at being racist than playing football. All right? Because in the end, Snyder ain't got nothing else to hang his hat on. He's got no wins that he can point to. It's not like he's built some new stadium that everybody loves or anything like that. In fact, in the 20-plus years that he has owned this team, what he has basically done is take one of the most loyal fan bases in sports and made them hate their own team, right? They don't show up to the games, all of that stuff. Like, they are out on that team in a way that I never thought was possible for those of us who grew up while Washington's football team was really good, you know, and like know what the affection and the enthusiasm was that was around the team. And I'm like, look, man, now is the time for you to change the name of the team. This is it. This is the moment. And a big part of why I felt like this was the time for him to go ahead and do this was at that time, I'd been watching what was going on in Mississippi with the state flag, all right? Now, this is an important thing to note. As many of you know, the state flag of Mississippi since 1894 had a Confederate emblem within the flag. The stars and bars are in the top left corner of that. And so I was going back through my tweets, and on June the 10th, and you know, this is all this stuff was going on. On June the 10th, this is when NASCAR said that they were no longer going to allow the Confederate flag at the track. And somebody said, well, all right, so up next is the Mississippi state flag. And I said on June 10th, I was like, nah, that ain't going to be up for very long. Don't you worry about that. And of course, people understandably responded to me and they were saying, no, I don't think it's coming down. I don't think we'll ever see this flag come down because they had seen, you know, how entrenched people had been about that flag. By the end of the month, that flag was down. And not only was that flag down by the end of the month, it came down with overwhelming margins in both chambers of the Mississippi legislature, both the state Senate and the state House. They both took it down. Like, I want to say it was something like 90 to 30 or something like that in the House. It was like 37 to 15 in the Senate. Like, it was a wrap on that state flag, right? But what I found interesting about the fact that it was a wrap on the flag was there wasn't no bloodshed this time in order to make it happen, right? And I don't mean literal blood, obviously, but there wasn't a fight. Like, unless something was going on that I had not seen, I didn't feel like there was this real groundswell about taking down the flag in Mississippi. We looked up one day, and the Southeastern Conference Commissioner, Greg Sankey, had sent out a letter saying that they would not host, the SEC would not host championship events in the state of Mississippi as long as that flag was up. Immediately after, the presidents of Ole Miss and Mississippi State put out statements that reiterated that since the year 2015, they have wanted for the state flag to come down, right? They were already at that place. This was moved by the Dylann Roof shooting, the Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston. Like, after that happened, that's when they were like, okay, guys, I think we probably need to do something about this. We need to take this down. The most powerful man in Mississippi politics is a gentleman named Philip Gunn. He's the Speaker of the State House in Mississippi. In 2015, he authored a bill to bring the Mississippi state flag down, right? They looked around and realized now is the time to do it. Now, nobody really was sure that the streets, that like the people of Mississippi would go for this, because they had a ballot initiative in 2001. They put it on the ballot. They had a choice of two flags, the old flag or some new flag. 65% of people voted for the old flag. Just so you understand how Mississippi gets down, 65% of people voted for the old flag. The white population in Mississippi is 62%. And they have a long legacy of voter disenfranchisement in that state, which is to say, Gabe, it doesn't sound like every white person in Mississippi voted for the old flag, but it do sound like a bunch of them did. All right, like that's where we were. But when it came time for that flag to come down, it came down without a fight. It just happened. The governor, now the thing with him was, he was like, if you put a bill in front of me, I'll sign it. Like, he was doing everything he could to keep his hands off the thing. But the fact that a state that's that Republican, that's that white, and has that long of a track record, according to their social norms, could overwhelmingly decide in those state houses that they were pushing that flag down, that tells me that somebody's money said this got to change. Right? And to give you perspective on this, in the year 2002, the NCAA told the state of South Carolina, if you don't take the stars and bars down from the state capitol in South Carolina, you're not going to get any championship events from us. We're not going to do it unless you take that flag down. They didn't take that flag down until 2015. Hell, Bree Newsom had to go take it down for them before they did something like that. All right. And so they fought it and fought it. And then, of course, Dylann Roof happened. And they had to like reevaluate what they were going to do with that flag. And then it ultimately came down. The reason I bring that up is, you telling me that South Carolina fought over this for 13 years. And then out of nowhere, the state of Mississippi said, all right, cool, let's just go ahead and get this done. Right. Like, that tells me that there's a push somewhere else that made the call that we're just not going to do this anymore. For whatever reason, we're not going to do this anymore. And my guess is, all these companies, like if you got a big plan, like I think Toyota's got a big plan in Mississippi, for example. If you're Toyota, you know it's only a matter of time before somebody comes and asks you, yo, so what's up with that flag in Mississippi? Why y'all doing business there? Like, all these things that are there, it's inevitable that somebody's going to come ask these questions. And these questions might be asked internally within your own operation, right? Like, all of this stuff. But there's no question that the day was going to come. And a lot of these people just decided, all right, we might as well get out ahead of this, right? Because what you don't want is people showing up to your stadium, right? What you don't want is people showing up to your campus. What you don't want is people tearing stuff down, right? Order is as tenuous in the streets as it's ever been. I don't think they want any of that. I think that all those people that looked around and saw these things they had and were like, nah, 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 nah. We look better if we go ahead and we do it ourselves rather than looking like we have been pushed to do this, okay? And so that takes us now to what happened in Washington. Fred Smith, CEO of FedEx. If I was him, I would have called the company Federal Express if I was him. You know what I'm saying? Like that's just me. Maybe, you know, that would make him seem a little too much like Freddie Mitchell, but at the same time, that's maybe what I would have done. Anyway, many years ago when Snyder first bought the team, Fred Smith bought a 5% stake in the team. He now owns a 10% stake in the team. And last week, we saw a bunch of advertisers, Nike being one of them. It was like $600 billion worth of companies worth of accounts or something like that. But they said that unless the name of that team changed in Washington, they were out. After that, Fred Smith put out a statement publicly and said, we think the name of the team needs to change. Now, people pointed to that and said, oh, man, one of his minority owners says that the team needs to change. Yeah, it's a minority owner. Snyder has all the voting power. You understand what I'm saying? Like, there's nothing really that Fred Smith could do. Now, FedEx's name is on the stadium, and who knows what kind of deal that they can make, you know, how that deal works and what could possibly be changed around that. But the thing to me was much less about whether Fred Smith, as a minority owner, had a particular clout, as much as it said to me, the money say this got to come down. All right. Some level of money somewhere. Look at all that money that said at one time, this has got to go. Like, I'm not trying to intimate that there's like some group text called the money, where all the money makes like these big, bold proclamations and makes decisions of what to do. I'm not saying that. Like, it's not like an Illuminati thing I'm telling you. But I am telling you that a certain segment of the American population that has a great deal of sway has clearly made the call that we're getting out of some of these games. And this seems to have happened with Washington. Let me tell you another one with Fred Smith. Fred Smith is a big booster at the University of Memphis. They are going to have a Black Lives Matter decal on the helmets of the University of Memphis football team this year. I saw something that said that one donor has said that if they lose any donations behind the Black Lives Matter sticker, that donor would match whatever donations are lost. All right. I don't know if that donor is Fred Smith. I'm not even trying to hint at this time at the idea that the donor in question is Fred Smith. What I am going to say, though, is if Fred Smith didn't want no Black Lives Matter sticker on that helmet, it wouldn't be no Black Lives Matter sticker on that helmet. He matters that much, right? And that dude told Dan Snyder, time for the name to change. And while you got all these reports privately about how Snyder doesn't want to change the name and the resistance that he, you know, has had to this, that name's going to change. Nike took it off the website. Like, you think about this for a second, Gabe. If you're Nike, if the word is getting out that we about to change the name of the franchise, all those jerseys on your website now become more valuable than they've ever been. It's reasonable to presume that there would be a run on those jerseys of people trying to get them while they can. Nike's like, nope, take it down.
I didn't even think about that part of it.
Yeah.
The collector's value.
Mm-hmm. And the collector's value, and just people who are that dedicated to being racist that they want to make sure that they got their last chance to get it in, you know? But Nike was like, no, we're taking this down. I'm just saying, my point being that there's a significant, powerful class of people in the United States that has decided that some of these things just aren't going to fly anymore. And they came to Dan Snyder and let him know it wasn't going to fly anymore. And then shortly thereafter, we hear from the baseball team in Cleveland. And they say, name coming down, right? You know, we're going to work on this. We're going to get this figured out. We're going to have this name. Gabe, are you noticing that there was no fight? Again, in both of these cases, not only was there no fight to bring it down, have you seen any real evidence of a fight to keep those names up? Have you seen a real fight from anybody about that Mississippi flag? I haven't seen it. About that name in Washington? I haven't seen it. About what's happening in Cleveland? I haven't seen it. People aren't pushing back that hard. Now, when you put it up on TV and you make it a media thing and like, what side are you on? If you present this issue as though there are two sides will bubble up. But we didn't treat these like it was two sides this time. It was Mississippi flag got to come down. It was the name for Washington's got to come down. It was the name for Cleveland got to come down. Because when Fred Smith put that out about he wanted the name change, I didn't really see no whole lot of polls in, do you think the name should change? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I didn't see any polls. And that's really the indicator of trying to play the both sides.
Right. That's what we always do in times like this. We always put it up there and we ask for all these opinions. And this time on both of those, the money said it's got to change. And when the money said it's got to change, we didn't throw it out there like it was some sort of issue. And guess what? All these things passed through peacefully. All these things went through smooth. Right? We never had to present this like they was two sides in the first place. Never at any point did we have to. Think about this. Think about yourself and whatever school you went to. And this ain't all of you, right? It's only going to affect so many people. But a lot of y'all went to schools that used to have Native American mascots. A lot of you did. And it ain't a Native American mascot no more. And guess what? A lot of you that I'm saying went to schools that had Native American mascots and it's not anymore, you didn't even know they had one in the first place. Stanford, for example, used to have a Native American mascot. People have been changing the names of these mascots and everything else. They've been doing this for so long. This is not new. High schools have been changing their names. The whole Mid-American Conference, it used to be the Central Michigan Chippewas, the Eastern Michigan Huron, all over the place. Miami of Ohio used to have a Native American mascot. St. John's used to be the Red Men, and then they became the Red Storm. All of these people have been doing this for the longest. None of these places burned down, right? None of them burned down. Syracuse, the Orange Men. You weren't always the Orange Men, I don't believe. I know they used to have like a mascot that they used to trot out. Like they used to call them the Saltine Warrior or something like that, right? But that's what they used to have. This is what it was. And everybody kept it moving after it changed. But every time we started talking about the Washington Redskins or the Cleveland Indians, we had to put it out here as if there were legitimately two sides. And there have never been two sides of this issue. There has been what was right and what some white people wanted. And I say some white people want it because it ain't even all the white people. And it don't even take all the white people. All it takes is some white people that people ain't trying to offend. And this is what I say. I mentioned this on Twitter the other day, but I want to spell this out for people because the Cleveland Indians thing, obviously, for those of you who know my work, I tie into the story a bit, right? And for those of you who do not know, in April of 2016, I was doing Mike and Mike. I flew up to Bristol and I'm doing Mike and Mike. Gabe's over there dying laughing already. And so I'm doing Mike and Mike and I wore a t-shirt that looked a lot like the logo for the Cleveland Indians, except it was a white man in the picture instead of Chief Wahoo. And instead of saying Indians, it said Caucasians. Okay. It caused a great stir on the internet, right? It was going all over the place. You Google me, it always comes up. When Cleveland, this thing came up about the name, it always, like, it's going to tie back to me. Now, I am always very clear because people are like, yo, man, you helped make this happen. No, I didn't. Native Americans been fighting this for decades. They the ones that made this happen, if anybody did, because they the ones that have screamed that this was a problem. Never forget that. I just wore a funny t-shirt. And again, I thought it was funny. I did not think that this was going to turn into some bold social statement. I just thought it was funny. I wore the funny t-shirt, and I always see on Twitter when people reference me wearing that shirt, they always tend to come up with something like, yo, man, white people were so mad at Bomani. Oh, man, white people lost their minds when Bomani wore that shirt. And I'm telling you, that's not what happened. There were certainly some people who had a problem with it, right? This was not a controversial issue. It wasn't a big deal when it happened. I left campus that day. I got no lecture for anybody. To this day, I have never received a phone call from anybody at ESPN about the fact that I wore that t-shirt in any way that implied that I did something wrong. Now, my agent got a couple calls from people who didn't really want to talk about it, but they, you know, with some, I don't know, something just don't feel right. But it has always been presented as though I did this and then white folks just all lost their minds. More white people that I noticed were behind me on this. Now, there was a whole bunch of, I don't care. You wear that. I'm not offended. See, I'm not offended. See, I'm not offended. See, I'm not offended. Right? Like, I got a lot of that. My point is, there weren't that many white people who thought I did something wrong. There weren't that many white people who thought I did something that could at all be defined as problematic. That's not what happened. It's just a few loud white people who have something to say in these moments. And then once that happens, those loud white people talk, and then it becomes positioned as somebody like encroaching on white privilege, and then everybody gets mad. But if some white people come out and say, we gonna stop this, then it stops. And that's what happened in Washington. That money, which is some white folks said, this is gonna stop. In Mississippi, and we talked about this on the podcast before, right? In Mississippi, when the SEC said it was gonna stop, some white folks came out and said it was gonna stop, then all of a sudden, that whole thing stopped. in Cleveland, they looked around and they're like, yo, man, white folks say this got to stop. And then that whole thing stopped. If we stop listening to the loud racists, we can get a lot of stuff done. Look at everything that's happened in the last month or two that just happened just because we stopped listening to the loud racists. Right? All these things that could have easily been taken care of if you just stopped listening to the them people in Minneapolis that went ahead and did the whole defund the police thing and the city council voted for it and it went through and people have not lost their minds. The world has not stopped spinning. Right? All these fans that Dan Snyder swore would maybe turn away from the team if he changed the name, they ain't gone. Like, the ones that ain't gone away from the team because of all this losing, you think they're sticking around for the racism? You that insecure that you don't believe that your team can hold their interest and can hold their attention? No. All these things could have happened in the first place. All we had to do is stop acting like we are obligated to listen to every white man with an opinion. If we stop pretending like we had to listen to everything that made white people mad, we could get all this stuff done. Because look, in Mississippi right now, that flag thing is a majority opinion. Like the polling indicates that it's a majority opinion that they wanted that flag to be changed by the time we got around to right now. That's where they were. But if they had positioned this in a way that allowed for some sides, it winds up getting polarized because what we do is we amplify the voices of loud, angry white people, and then they become the representatives of all white people. And whose fault is that? The white people that tell me that I got to listen to them. That's whose fault it is, because you don't have to listen to them necessarily. You can know right and wrong when you see it, and you can operate on the basis of it. It doesn't have to be some, hey, man, everybody gets to feel the way they feel. You didn't have to do that. I have people who hit me up about the Native Americans name issue, and they say, well, what about the idea that there are polls that indicate that the majority of Native Americans don't have a problem with these names? When did you start giving a damn about what Native Americans thought? Like, for the people who asked me that, when that name went up, did you have it up because Native Americans want it? Did you go around and ask them, hey, are y'all cool with this? And then decide to do it and then come back and be like, hey, we asked them. No, that's not what it is. That's retrofitting your argument. You backfilling it to try to make sense out of what it is that you've done, because that's not the way that it goes. Decency is decency is decency. And you know what's right. You know what's wrong. You don't have to ask them about it. Like, if they were to come to you after and be like, hey, I just wanted to let you know, I think that this is a problem. If your response is, well, I'm going to go find me another Indian that feels something different, then you understand what I'm saying? Like, what are you talking about? We didn't have to let any of these things slide, any of them. And now we just decided we not go let them slide. And look how much better things have gotten. Now, before we move on, I do want to make this one more point. Gabe, I don't know if you saw this, but Washington football team has 3 minority owners. They all want to sell their shares of the team. They've all tried and can't find a buyer. Can you imagine having an NFL team in a top 10 market and not being able to sell off the shares?
Especially when people are like cutting off an arm and a leg trying to get in there.
Yes.
Trying to buy any team.
Right. Just to get a piece of it, because once you got a piece, you get in and you rub shoulders and now you're there. Right. And these cats are looking at Snyder like, nah, how bad do you have to be at this for people to look at you in that way, for those folks? And look, Dan Snyder as a businessman, like, go check his wiki page and look how he got his money. He's actually a pretty bright dude, right? Like, in terms of his plans and how to make it happen, I was like, okay, I mean, he got all that money by 32 years old. Like, I want to say he was 32. Like, that's his biggest problem. If you want to be honest about what got Dan Snyder in trouble, 32 was too young to own an NFL team and have all the power that he had. And he was in a position where he didn't have to listen to anybody at all. That was his issue. He made his biggest dream come through at 32. He's hired Hall of Fame coaches and haven't been able to make it work. He's done everything that you could think of to try to make this work and just can't ever figure out the way to make it work because he just won't listen to nobody. That's his problem. But for all that money to have a piece of your football team, this wonderful appreciating asset, and they can't give it away, they can't sell it to nobody, nobody wants to get on board, you're worse at this than literally anybody else in the world.
Where does this end? You have said it's like when it comes to the Washington football team's name and when it comes to like Cleveland's baseball team, it's been this way for so long. They're one of the last detractors. People never thought it would happen. You know, now that people are able to get past these, what else is kind of up for discussion? Because I was thinking about it the other day. What about the San Diego Padres? They're taking down, you know, the statues of Junipero Serra out in California because these mission dudes basically running like pseudo concentration camps or like conversion camps of all the Native Americans out there. So like the Padres, is that up for discussion too now? What about San Diego State Aztecs?
Now understand the Aztecs. What a lot of those programs have done along the way is what I would call compromise steps. So for example, the Aztecs of San Diego State, they used to have a mascot named Monty Montezuma. Yeah. You can imagine that. Have you ever heard of Chief Nakahoma for the Braves?
Oh, my.
Yes.
No.
And understand, Chief Nakahoma was out there in the 80s.
Oh, boy. And I haven't heard a peep from Atlanta. I haven't heard a peep from Kansas City either.
Both of them are in somewhat interesting situations that give them a bit of leeway on this. What the Braves have to get rid of, and what I think you'll never see again at the stadium, at least encouraged by the stadium in Atlanta, is the tomahawk chop is done. And please, before you get on any tradition argument, they started doing the tomahawk chop in Atlanta in 1991. This is not something they've been doing forever. Deion Sanders brought it with him. He's the one that got the tomahawk chop going with the Braves, right? So just so you know that, this is not some established thing. But the tomahawks are going to come off the jersey, my guess. And the chop itself is going to go. Because keep in mind, the Braves are not owned by a person. The Braves are owned by a corporation. So that's what I think is going to happen. The issue with the Chiefs is that their name is not inherently disrespectful. Like, it's the Chiefs. You see what I mean? Like, that is different than Redskins. We would all agree. And it is also, by the way, different than Indians. Like, though, like as a name, it's not in the same place. I even think it's different than like Blackhawks in a lot of ways, which is like such a direct reference. However, all their imagery is based on Native American stuff. Arrowhead Stadium, the arrowheads on the helmet, the people doing the tomahawk chop at the stadium, and the fact white folks stay going too far, people dressing up.
By keeping it, it allows people to take it that next step. Yes. Like with the Confederate flag, with NASCAR, if you allow it, people will take it to that next step. And then there's no ability
There's the issue.
Like,
white folks' judgment on how to handle these matters cannot be trusted. like that's that. But you know what's interesting? Like with people doing like the dress up stuff. So I remember in 91, this is the first year the Braves got good. And the last series of the season, I forget who the Braves were playing at home that weekend to try to take the division from the Dodgers, but the Dodgers were playing the Giants the last weekend. So, of course, it's Dodgers-Giants. It's at Candlestick Park, and the Dodgers are playing for the division against the Braves, right? I just never forget the camera shots of those people in San Francisco with headdresses and all that stuff, which, by the way, is stuff that you didn't see in the crowds at Braves games, for whatever it's worth. Like, at least by the 90s, you didn't really see that stuff at Braves games. Of course, you had the chop, but you didn't see people go that far. They had their opportunity. It was to root against the Dodgers, so they were rooting for the Braves, so they were head-dressed up, you know, all this stuff. White folks have demonstrated that they cannot be trusted with this thing because the levels of privilege that come didn't lead people to believe they could do too much. Basically, if your team has a Native American name, every day Halloween, and you don't know who's going to show up in that costume, that's going to wind up on the internet, right? And that's where the Chiefs wind up in that terrible situation, because they would have some leeway where they could do this with some dignity if they wanted to. It doesn't necessarily have to be offensive, but it's going to be offensive. And so they have to get rid of it. I think all of these things are ultimately going to change. And you know why? Because they've changed in so many places before and everybody's been okay. The moral of the story here is somehow America is more racist than people realize when it comes to stuff that matters, and less racist than they realize on the stuff that doesn't. But a couple people get mad about the stuff that doesn't, and now you think that that's everybody. And you know whose fault this is? The white people that let the loud ones drown out their voices. Because if you wanted to stand, you could have stood and a lot of this stuff wouldn't change. But you just waited for the money to do it for you this time. And I guess, hey, thanks to you, thanks to the money. But obviously, we didn't have to be so late.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right. The great social experiment is here. These things happen when I go on vacation, which is like news just tends to pop off. And the news that popped off in this case, Cam Newton, Bill Belichick found another open box special. Got Cam Newton for the low, low. Have you seen the stats, Gabe? Like the numbers, were they showing like how much less money Cam Newton and Jameis Winston are making? Like basically they're the lowest paid backup quarterbacks in the league that aren't all rookie deals. Yeah, it's wild. You know, Cam wound up in a tricky situation because there was all the uncertainty around his injury. I get why he was in the position that he was in, though it's still crazy that he had to sign a deal that was so cheap. But now Cam Newton is going to Boston. And did you see when Cam was on the IG where he said he's tired of being humble? What a giant man. Right? Like you see that dude in the weight room and somebody be like, all right, that's the quarterback. No way. Just a giant man. So anyway, he didn't get anything wrong this time, thank goodness, right? But he gets to do it Cam stuff. He's like, you know, in the jungle, it's the hyenas. I don't know why he went first to the hyenas. I don't think about them when I think about the jungle that way. He said it was the hyenas. He said it's the antelopes. I don't know how he got the antelopes either, but he went through all the animals. But he's like, there's one lion. And he said, that gonna roar. Like he was in full Atlanta country mode. Like he was in all of it, right? Gabe, when was Cam humble?
Yeah, humble is not the word I would use to describe Cam Newton. No shade, but not the word I would describe.
When was that? Do you remember it? Like, whatever that day was when Cam was humble, I must have been on vacation again. He says that he's, all that stuff. Yeah, Cam Newton, he out the humble business. I cannot wait to see this social experiment that is going to be Cam Newton playing for the New England Patriots. I sure hope he's good.
The radio like game in Boston has already started on this, talking about the Patriot way and Cam Newton celebrating and whether or not Belichick's going to tolerate it.
Yo, here's my question about that, because I did see that. Okay, so let's say that there is this Patriot way, right? And let's say that the Patriot way means no celebration, which is actually not really what it means, but okay, fine. I mean, Rob Gronkowski looked like he still had a hell of a good time, you know, doing what he did, right? Tom Brady looked like he found a way to get his celebrate on when the time came, all right? So let's just say that it's this Patriot way and that you're not allowed to, you know, celebrate and kick it like Cam does and everything else. Why would your problem be with Cam and not with Bill Belichick, right? Like, why are you not on the radio saying, come on, Bill, let this man have fun, right? Because if he has fun, we are going to have fun. Why would that not be your approach as opposed to, oh, he's not doing it the way that we do it up here? Y'all like that? Like, I understand that you like the winning, but I don't believe that there's any correlation at all between the winning and the celebrating. I don't think there's any correlation between losing and celebrating. I don't think there's any correlation at all with that. It's just something to do. Why y'all out here rooting for boring? I don't see why that would be the way that you would ever want to get down. Why do you want to root for boring? You should be rooting for the fun in this. And boy, you are going to have the fun, Cam Newton, if he plays well. I would just really like if he played well. I don't want to live in a world of sports coverage where he does not play well. Like, I don't have any real personal investment in how well Cam plays. I do have a personal investment in not having to deal with the incoming Twitter class of 2020, getting their new accounts up and bombarding me because Cam not playing well. I don't really need that in my life, Gabe. I'm not really interested in, no. I don't want those things. The other thing I want to note too, man, have y'all really forgotten how good Cam Newton was? Or did you never realize how good it was? And I bring this up because yesterday I got into this thing about Matt Ryan. And I don't think Matt Ryan's a Hall of Famer. I am blown away by the idea. Like, other than Falcons fans, nobody thinks that Matt Ryan is a Hall of Famer. But Falcons fans ain't never had in their lives. Therefore, they see a guy like that and they want to jump all over, oh, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame. Only because y'all don't know no better. That's fine. I'm trying to think. How many, like, dyed-in-the-wool Atlanta Falcons have made the Hall of Fame? Claude Humphrey is the only one that I can think of. Like, Deion Sanders is not a dyed-in-the-wool Atlanta Falcon. You understand what I'm saying? Like, I don't know who else we got. Jesse Tuggle didn't make the Hall of Fame. Keith Brookin ain't going to make the Hall of Fame. Mike Ken ain't going to make the Hall of Fame. Julio might at some point. In fact, that should tell you how hard it is to get into the Hall of Fame. And this is what they lose sight of, okay? Julio Jones might make the Hall of Fame. But these idiots are positive that Matt Ryan's going to make it.
Okay.
But anyway, I made the point about Matt Ryan that for the majority of Matt Ryan's career, he has been the third best quarterback in his own division. And that's not really shade to him as much as it is the NFC South has had great quarterback play for the last decade. Cam Newton's a better quarterback than Matt Ryan. And so what people would do is they'd hit me back with all these stats, right? Like, oh, well, Matt Ryan averaged 4,600 yards passing. By the way, all numbers that I think are useless. Like, you'll find that when I start talking about football players and my cases in Hall of Fame stuff, you're not going to see me go do a statistical case unless there's something very, very, very particular. But Matt Ryan's been throwing the ball 600 times a year since he walked into the league, right? He's been in super pass happy offenses since he got in there. And in 2016, when he was the MVP, he was very good. But have you ever thought of Matt Ryan as being like one of the five best quarterbacks in the league? Because if you're not a guy that we immediately think of as one of the five best at quarterback, then you're not in the discussion for the Hall of Fame. You probably need to be up there on like 2-3 level. Like, it just so happened that we had an embarrassment of quarterback riches with Brady, Breeze, Roethlisberger, Manning, like Aaron Rodgers, like all those guys being really good at the same time. That's wild uncommon. And y'all talking to me about Matt Ryan being in the Hall of Fame. He's just not. He's just not. It's okay, but he's just not in the Hall of Fame. Cam Newton was an absolute force, right? Like, we don't know if he's still going to be a force. Dude walked into the league and threw for what, like 4,000 yards his first year? Like, if you want to talk about that, that's walking in really not knowing what he was doing. Like, I know what the Panthers were telling Cam his rookie year. If it's man, throw to the receivers. If it's zone, throw to the tight ends. That was basically what they were telling him to get out there and, you know, get out there and get it done. Cam is the number one, and we're going to see how this holds up now that he's coming back. Without question, the best third and short option that there has ever been in the NFL. Without question. The best third and short option there's ever been. Did you realize this? Do you know how many 1,000-yard rushers Cam Newton played with the Panthers, Gabe?
Two.
Christian McCaffrey.
Just Christian McCaffrey. So D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart never had 1,000 yards. Not Tolbert either.
Not playing with him. Never had 1,000 yards. Never did. Like, this is all I'm saying. Like, here's what's different about Cam versus every other quarterback that I can think of, and this includes Michael Vick and Randall Cunningham and all these guys. Cam is the first quarterback that I can think of. Lamar Jackson has now taken this on himself, where the quarterback is the center of the passing game and the center of the run game. You know what I mean? Like that. Like, he is, it's like college and high school. He was the offense. So, like, you could come to me and you could pull out all these big passing stats from Matt Ryan, right? You can do that. And I'm not saying that he has not done impressive work throwing the ball. I'm just saying that you're kind of missing the point when you don't look at it in this way. So, who's thrown for more yards? Yeah, Matt Ryan. Absolutely. How many coaches in the NFL do you really believe, if given the choice between having those two dudes, was really going to go with Matt Ryan? Like, especially as Cam developed, especially as you get to, like, the 2015 season and all of that stuff. Like, how many of them dudes, they got to the Super Bowl with Ted Ginn as their number one receiver and no 1,000-yard rusher. With Michael Orr as the left tackle and Mike Remmers as the right tackle. And in that year, as much as people talk about Cam always had good defenses, that was the number one scoring offense in the league that year and the number six scoring defense in the league that year that they went to the Super Bowl and went 15-1. Like, I don't know how it is that y'all have forgotten what an absolute monster he was. And I know how. It's because he became polarizing guy. You always had so many people that were trying to come up and talk to you about what it was that Cam could not do. This is the difference to me between a guy like Cam and a guy like Matt Ryan. All right? And by the way, just so that nobody gets it twisted, I don't think Cam's going in the Hall of Fame or is a Hall of Famer either, just to be clear. The Falcons have asked Matt Ryan to throw to guys who were open. And if guys were open, Matt Ryan would throw the ball. No shade, but that's what he was asked to do. Cam was being consistently asked to throw dudes open, right? See that guy there that's not actually open? Make him open. Is that something that you're like asking a Matt Ryan to do? Probably not. No shade to him. That's not what you're going to ask him to do. He's not that kind of talent. He's not that kind of player. And that's why if you come rattle off to me all the stats about how great Matt Ryan is, I'm like, okay, now let's go watch some football. Like, let's go see what we've got, and you tell me which one of those guys that you would have. The 2012 NFC Championship game, the Falcons blew a 17-0 lead to the 49ers, and Matt Ryan threw for a whole bunch of yards, but also had two turnovers in the third quarter because they didn't score no points in the second half. there was no way in the world that you could watch that game in 2012 and see Matt Ryan and see Colin Kaepernick and Matt Ryan be the guy that you'd want after that game. There just wasn't. He's not that guy. He's not that guy. Cam is that dude, or he was. I don't think he can be that dude anymore because physically it's just hard for me to believe that he can be that guy. And what Josh McDaniels ultimately figures out how to get out of him, we will see. But do not forget, Josh McDaniels is the guy who drafted Tim Tebow. If he drafted Tim Tebow, he must think Cam Newton is Superman. You know what I'm saying? And by the way, got like a 300-yard game out of Tim Tebow as a rookie. Like, if there's something left in Cam, they're going to be the ones to figure out how to get it, right? If there's something left in him, they're going to get it out of him. It's just a matter of whether he has it. And that's why I laugh with these people. Again, we got some folks hitting me up talking about, well, he's going to have to compete for the job with Jarrett Stidham. No, he doesn't.
Well, there's only one coach in the NFL that's going to have a decision to make between Cam Newton and Jarrett Stidham.
Right. Y'all, somehow y'all think that Bill Belichick is a genius, but it's going to be a competition between him and Stidham. The competition is simple. If Cam Newton is healthy enough to play, like to play healthy, then he's going to be the starter. And Jarrett Stidham go, how stupid do you have to be to say that? Have these people even seen Jarrett Stidham ever play a game of football? Because I've seen, I mean, in the pros. Because I've seen him play at Auburn. I've seen him play at Baylor. You kidding me? If they thought that it was a competition between Cam Newton and Jarrett Stidham, guess who wouldn't be on the Patriots? Cam Newton. Dummies. Just stupid. Just like, I just don't understand how you can't hear how stupid that sounds. Right? But as my man Derek Ginn always says, Cam Newton makes people stupid. We will just now have to wait to find out if he makes New England better. So I've been seeing some tweets about how DeSean Jackson had put some up on the Instagram, and it was related to Louis Farrakhan. Now, Louis Farrakhan believes and espouses a lot of absolutely indefensible things. The Nation of Islam believes and shares a lot of things that I find to be like wildly indefensible. There is the anti-Semitism, obviously the misogyny, the way they treat LGBTQ people, all of these things. These are terrible, indefensible ways that they view the world and encourage other people to view the world. There are a lot of black people, and they are basically all men, who view Farrakhan entirely through the lens of black empowerment and of resisting racism and the power that Farrakhan has managed to carve out in a world that is basically entirely black, right? And there's, so there's, though July 4th comes, Farrakhan's giving a speech. All these people, these rappers, ball players, everybody else is putting it on Instagram that Farrakhan's giving a speech and telling people that they need to hear that speech. And I'm like, oh, no, this is not how we should do this. This is not what we need to do. This is not what it is. But Farrakhan is like wild, charismatic, and speaks very, very clearly and pointedly about everything that he has to say. And he really moves people. And so it's always somebody that's going to get on it. And you're like, oh, man, I don't know. This isn't going to go well. And that person was DeSean Jackson. And DeSean Jackson got on the Instagram. And again, I'm expecting that he's going to say something about Farrakhan, which is problematic enough. No. This is what he says. It is a quote that starts. It's from a book. He is reading a book. And the book is apparently called Jerusalem by somebody named Deneen Barnett. I am unfamiliar with Deneen Barnett, but DeSean Jackson wanted to let us know that he was reading. And so he chose to put a highlighted portion of this on his Instagram story. And I am not going to read the entirety of the portion of this that he put on Instagram, or the excerpt. I'm not going to read it all. I'm just going to read to you the first two words. And the first two words are, Hitler said. I don't feel like I need to read anything else to you. I don't feel like anything else that he said after that matters. The first two words were, Hitler said. What? I don't care if Hitler said the sky is blue. If Hitler said the sky is blue, the sky ain't blue no more. Or we gonna have to come up with another word for blue. It's just gotta change. Like, hey, you know how people talk about like the swastika, what the swastika originally meant, you know, all this other stuff? Don't matter. Hitler got a hold of it. Now the hip, now the swastika mean what Hitler say it mean. And that means, no, we gotta go do something else. That's how I felt when I saw this with DeSean Jackson. You really started your sentence with Hitler said and thought, I'm going to put this on the internet. And then, by the way, after putting it on the internet, and a legitimate firestorm bubbled up because you said Hitler said, and okay, I will read the rest for you because it did in fact get worse, because some of you might be thinking, well, maybe Hitler did say the sky is blue. No, here it says Hitler said, because the white Jews know that the Negroes are the real children of Israel, and to keep America's secret, the Jews will blackmail America. I'm assuming this is supposed to say they will extort America, but it says they will extort America. Their plan for world domination won't work if the Negroes know who they are. The white citizens of America will be terrified to know that all this time they've been mistreating and discriminating and lynching the children of Israel. Yes, 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 yes. He put this on the internet. And Gabe, you want to hear some of the reviews on Amazon of this book?
Oh, let's hear them.
One of them is titled, "Highly recommend to anyone looking for truth."
Oh, in case you haven't found truth yet.
Yes, yes, yes. Another one is "Breaking Down Mental Walls."
Wow.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm just saying, I be talking to y'all about these books that don't have barcodes. Now, this book obviously has a barcode, but this does not. I mean, and maybe I'm being wrong here, right? Maybe I am being unfair about this, but I just feel like, nah, none of this seems like a good idea to read. And I just can't imagine the life that you live where you decide that this is the thing that I'm going to share. And then after this, after he has put this up, here's what DeSean Jackson says. "Anyone who feels I have hate towards the Jewish community took my post the wrong way. I have no hatred in my heart towards no one." It says they will extort America. Their plan for world domination won't work if the Negroes know who they are. Gabe, no one has ever complimented the Jews for trying to dominate the world. And I am not saying the Jews are trying to dominate the world, because I have no reason to believe that the Jews are trying to dominate the world. If they are trying to dominate the world, good gracious, I think they would do a better job. Like, this is my question. Like, I always wondered this for Jewish people sincerely, how it has to feel and how aggravating and annoying it has to be. The persecution that Jews have dealt with at every turn in the world, at every place. And somebody out here telling you that you run the world. Like, how many things, if Jewish people really ran the world, do you really think it would have gone for them the way that it has? Like, do you really believe that? Like, it's so outlandish and it's so off the wall, and none of it comes from a positive place, right? Now, I do think that with Black people, there's a tendency to try to compliment Jews and insult them. The whole, you know, Jews stick together type of thing. And a lot of Black people actually revere the idea that Jewish communities are insular and that everybody takes care of each other and so forth and so on, right? Like, they think that's a thing that Black people should aspire to. That is what their belief is. That's not where anybody's coming from on the Jews run the world trope. Nobody is starting from a positive place on this, but DeSean Jackson gonna have us believe that he posted that, you know, not because he got, then what was the point? What was the point? And so I've seen some cats on the internet that are raising the question as to whether or not he's going to lose his job behind this, like whether the Eagles are going to release him. My guess is that they won't. There's a couple reasons why I don't think they will. Number one, they didn't release Riley Cooper, and I don't think they want that comparison, even if you don't think those two things are the same. And I think there are arguments to be made on both sides. But they didn't release Riley Cooper. Therefore, I don't think they want this, especially after DeSean Jackson was on the team when they didn't release Riley Cooper and like refused to speak to the dude. I don't think that they want that comparison. Number two, the way things move, they move so fast that this will probably go away. And by the time they have a season, if there's a season, a lot of people are no longer going to think about it. You know, like all of that's probably going to wind up happening. So I think he winds up staying on the team. If they did release him, I'm not fighting it. I'm not complaining. I think that, you know, when Riley Cooper did not get released, I never said he should have been. My thing on Riley Cooper was, if the team could find a way to live with him, then you go ahead and you make it work. And they found a way to live with it for 2 years, and then they ultimately let him go and he never played again. If they keep him, I would understand. If they cut him, I'm with it, right? I just can't believe that in 2020, A, we're like really still doing this Farrakhan thing. Like, have you seen Ice Cube's Twitter account?
I haven't, no.
Oh, dude, he's been out here like sending all the crazy Illuminati, like anti-Semitic stuff off of his Twitter account. And what's wild to me about him is his politics have not evolved since 1992. Like, he still has the same politics that he had on death certificate. I can't see how in 30 years you have not moved past some of these things or don't see what the problem and the dangers are and some of these things that you are sharing. Like, I don't get it. And then fast forward, and DeSean Jackson's over here basically doing the same thing, and he think he kicking knowledge. That's the other part, too. I guarantee you, he think he out here putting us up on game. See, if y'all know y'all selves, what? And then trying to tell us, Gabe, you took it the wrong way. You ever notice that the people who tell you you took it the wrong way don't ever tell you how you should have took it?
Yeah, and then they start getting defensive. It's like, oh, you're attacking me now.
Yeah. Like,
don't be attacking me. I'm just the messenger.
Yeah. What was I supposed to say here? Help me out. And also, I can't imagine what's on the next page. Like, if that's the part that he shared, I don't know what he's got on the next page. Oh, hold on. I forgot. The part he didn't highlight, but the next paragraph. They will fear God will destroy them as he destroyed Egypt for doing the same thing. So the elite, the Illuminati, keeps this a secret at all cost. Not costs, Gabe. Cost.
No barcode on that book.
No. I'll put it like this. There may have been a barcode, but I don't think there was an editor.
Yeah, I was going to say. Conspicuously left off.
Hold on. Here's the, again, as he says, y'all took it the wrong way. This is the last paragraph that he had posted. After I die, I will one day cause World War III just by this message, which will be like planting a seed in people's minds until it sprouts once they nurture that seed and seek more truth and learn. Hitler was right. You put something on the internet that started with Hitler said and ended with Hitler was right. Nothing in the middle matters. Nothing. You can't make a sandwich of bread that bad.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. So coming off the holiday weekend, and because of the amount of voicemails that we got, we decided to just do the voicemail segment today. No, if you haven't heard. Bo, would you like to share the topic and the genesis for the topic today?
Yeah, so basically the other day, me and Foxworth did a show. And we were just kind of talking about that time you accidentally wound up in a neighborhood that was a little more rough and tumble than you expected to be. Like, somebody's like, yeah, just meet me over here. And you follow the directions and you get there and you're like, whoa, hey, I don't feel so comfortable around this. A lot of us have been in that situation. You just didn't know what you was walking into. And then you walked into it and wanted to walk out, but walking out wasn't really an option. So the people, we asked you guys your stories. And apparently this is a common thread of life because we had almost 100 of y'all send in voicemails.
Very common thread. Everyone's story is a little bit different, which makes it oh so good. So our first comes from Kevin in Texas.
Man, one time my old lady needed to get her computer fixed. So the nearest Apple store is either in Dallas or Little Rock. So I don't want to fool with the traffic. We go to Little Rock. Drop the computer off at the store. It's almost the first day of school, so my boy's like, Dad, we need a haircut. So we're like, all right. So I put it in the Google, Black Barbershop. 5 minutes away from the mall. We hang a left. We hang a right. I see a cat hanging on the corner with a bulletproof vest on, wearing all red. I was like, oh, we ain't at the crib no more. So anyway, we head to the barbershop. Now, you know how Black Barbershop is. Most time, a quarter neutral ground, right? Anyway, we get there. It's bars on that joker. Anyway, we ran up in there. Boys got their hair cut. I made it a point to let them know before we went up in there, man, don't tell them you're from Texas. Just say we're traveling through. Needless to say, we made it out there unscathed. Came on back to the crib. Nothing happened. But man, what an experience.
Yeah, yeah. I forget the first part I heard that was like, oh, I've lived that one, but I've definitely lived the I'll just Google a barbershop and get there and be like, yo, where we at? I've been there.
Don't tell them we're from Texas. Yeah, just tell them we're passing through.
Yeah. Do not tell them we ain't from around here is a pretty like strong rule that you want to have. Yeah, because the thing about like, you know, a place like Arkansas, they don't want to hear you from Texas because they're like, oh, you think you better than us, huh? that's where they are in that situation.
An old timey like Western saloon, the old frontier. Yes. Don't tell them we're from around here.
Yeah. No, man. The less information, the better.
All right, this next one, the guy didn't leave his name or where he was from. It was a good one, though.
Man, you're talking about riding into a rough neighborhood. How about riding into your old neighborhood and not realizing that the corner situation had changed? And now there are some young boys running the corner that you ain't never seen or heard of, but you have a little bit of a reputation, and you recognize one of the young boys, and they give you the hall pass, and you're thinking to yourself, I'm not ever coming back to visit nobody in the neighborhood ever again because the corner situation might be vastly different next time.
I got to say, hearing him reminded me of the other part of my man's story before. We talked about he turned through and he saw the bulletproof vest. Man, one time when I lived in North Carolina, I was once engaged to a woman who lived in New York. And so I would make a lot of runs back and forth. And so I drove back home one Sunday and I'm like, cool, I'm going to stop by this soul food spot on Holloway in Durham. And look, I don't know what Holloway looking like right now, but y'all, those of you, you know, if you know, you know, you know what Holloway used to look like back then. This is like 2007. All right. They gentrifying, but this is what Holloway was. There's a reason why they could gentrify because of what it used to be. So anyway, I get off the freeway. I'm going down Holloway to go to this soul food joint. And I'll just never forget. I saw a dude on a Sunday afternoon standing on a corner in a baseball jersey, some jean shorts, some Air Force Ones, and he had a baseball bat over his shoulder. That was it. I turned around and went home. Like, I don't know who he was waiting on, but I didn't want to be there when he showed up.
It's like the guy with the bulletproof vest.
Yeah.
They're waiting for something.
Yeah, whatever you're worried about, I should be worried too. Like, if you have on a bulletproof vest, I feel like I should also have on a bulletproof vest.
It's getting ready to go on a mission.
Yeah. And I don't want to be there.
This next one comes from Terrell in Memphis.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait.
Bo, what he do, man? It's your boy, Colin. By the time my homeboy took me to a rough neighborhood, and I ain't know it, man. So he called me one day and was like, hey, you know what I'm saying? It's a little female I want to go see or whatever, young lady. So I'm like, cool, I'll ride over there with you. He was like, yeah, I just want you to ride with me. You know, we're going to probably drink a little bit and, you know, get something to eat, you know. So we pull up to some apartments on the other side of town, not from the side we from, which is already a red flag. So we pull up. He goes in and speak with the young lady. I sit in the car, you know, drinking me a little hen or whatnot. And as I do that, I see a gentleman walk behind the car. He lean on the car. Where I'm from, you don't really lean on somebody's car unless you know them. So I don't say nothing. He kind of raised up out the car. He's standing under the light post where he can see the car still not too far from me. So, you know, I get back to drinking a little bit, listen to a little radio. And when I look over, now it's three people. You know, put my head down again, look back over. Now it's six people. And at that moment, I realized they were looking at me and that I'm assuming this young lady talked to one of these gentlemen. I blow the horn for my partner to come out. He started giving me the one finger hold up sign. Man, boy, I blowed that horn. I could have made a beatbox and I could have rapped to the horn blow as I blowed the horn. And as I came out and my partner jumped in the car, they started walking to the car. And we pulled off and they chased the car, man. This is a real true story. They chased the car. Glad we got out of there safe.
Hey, man, let me tell you something about this point I'm at in my life. And I didn't like fully figure out how to articulate it until right now. Don't take me nowhere where I can't go in with you. If I got to stay in the car, I don't want to go.
Yeah, if I get the one finger hold up, I'm gone.
Man was like, nah, hold on, give me 1 second. No, give me the keys. We got to get out of here. That was nice of him to not lead a dude. He said six dudes start circling, surrounding the situation.
Oh, my gosh. All right, this next one comes from Bill in Houston.
So back in 2015, I was driving for Uber because I was trying to make ends meet since I lost my job. I pick up this 19-year-old kid off Richmond Avenue, and he was on Richmond Avenue going away from the Galleria. Going towards the Galleria is not nice and glitzy. Going away from the Galleria, it gets kind of rough. So I pick him up. He needs to run a bunch of errands, and then he sends me over to West Oaks Mall. Now, being from Houston, I know you know West Oaks Mall is about a step down from Sharpstown. It could be kind of rough. And he said he was waiting for somebody, and he had an iPhone box right next to him. And I know it wasn't an iPhone in there, but the guy never showed up. So he sends me on this wild goose chase. We go to this Popeye's, and we wait for somebody. He flags down this red Impala that circles the drive-thru twice. He goes in his red Impala, talks to the guy. I see him looking at the revolver from the passenger side mirror. And then I kind of freak out. His girlfriend was still in the car, and I wanted to leave, but I couldn't leave with her in the car. So I told him, like, hey, that has to be my last stop because I have somewhere else to go. I have another call. He's like, oh, I got the address to where I need to go. So we get on the freeway. The guy in the red Impala is following us. And I was like, why is he following us to the same destination? He could just rope with him and stop the fare. 5 seconds later, the guy shoots at us. And I was freaking out. It's like it's a scene from Die Hard with the Vengeance. I pull over, get to the precinct. I told this guy, like, hey, if you're in some trouble, you need to talk to the cops. Like, no, we can't. We can't. I let him out the car. Cops pulled me over. They talked to me. I was detained. I had to talk to them. They cleared me. They found the kid. He was basically selling the fake bill of goods. And then I had the next day, I had to report it on my insurance to Uber. And they said, well, based on the situation, we don't usually cover that in rental cars. I was like, well, based on me working for Uber, I usually don't get shot at. So you have to reimburse me. Needless to say, they did reimburse me and they repaired my car that had a bullet hole. And every ride since, when every rider asked me what's my scariest story on Uber, I told them that story and they gave me a fat tip afterwards.
Wow. Next thing you know, he's shooting.
Die Hard with the Vengeance. On the
yo, if you got some problems, you need to talk to the police. Yo, I ain't even trying to get his no advice right now. If you got a problem, you need to take it up with him and leave me out of it.
You're getting shot at. It's not like you're shooting back either.
That's a great point. Yeah, he was simply being shot a pawn.
You're just a big target.
Why does this car keep following us? And by the way, the red Impala, always a bad sign. My whole boy had a red Impala once because it was rented. Like, he was like, his car was in the shop or something. He got rented. And this is when Durham was a little more rough and tumble about those things. And he's like, yo, man, I can't drive this car anywhere.
Looking like a mark.
It was worse than looking like a mark. It's looking like you want trouble. It's like looking like he's affiliated with something that my man was not.
Last couple here comes from Daryl in Chesapeake.
So, Bomani met my wife in 2007. We were in Oakland. We went to an event. And the event started, it was like some type of weight loss challenge back in 07 with Kelly Price. I was a TV show back then. I can't recall what the TV show was, but, you know, we went, and I was like, well, why is it so early? Why is it like 9 o'clock in the morning? I mean, why is it so early? She was like, you will see why. So I said, is it dangerous? My wife was like, you will see why. So, you know, we went to the event, had a good time and everything. So around 9, 10, 11, around 3, 4-ish, when it started to get dark, all of a sudden the whole vibe changed. You would hear bass music and, you know, what's all that noise? He said, oh, that's why everybody's leaving now, you know. So I look up, and keep in mind, I'm in Oakland now. I'm from Virginia, so I'm out there in Oakland because that's where she was from. And next thing I know, I see guys coming up the street, not even driving the car. They're outside of the car, walking beside. I'm like, what is? She said, oh, they're doing a hype thing. Let's come on. Let's hurry up. Let's go. So by then, you know, everybody ought to clear it out or whatever, but I assume you get the picture, but that was the craziest eye-opening thing back then to start an event that I'm used to starting later on in the evening then to get to that. And they start at 9 o'clock so they can get out of there before everyone else wakes up and destroys everything.
Yeah, let me tell you what I don't need no parts of. No event that involves the phrase, you'll see. No, you'll tell.
Before people wake up, when the streets are quiet, it's kind of like in a college town when you wake up, yes. And you go out, oh, I'm going to go get a coffee or I'm going to go get a breakfast burrito or something at like 9 a.m., dead outside.
Yeah, I was driving Miami at 9 o'clock. like the Cleveland, like Cleveland, where I used to work, you know, when highly questionable. Cleveland got a bar, Cleveland got a restaurant. Cleveland don't serve breakfast.
Dude, ghost riding down the street in Oakland.
It's a lot going on.
Yeah, like Marshawn Lynch out there.
Yes.
All right, this last one. The guy didn't leave his name or where he's from, but it's a good one to cap us off here.
Hey, Bo, big fan. First time, long time. I'm calling to tell you about my story where I got stuck in the wrong hood. So a couple of my friends about college age, towards the younger end of the college age, so not really ready to drink just yet. But somehow we ended up at the waterfront having a nice time in this particular city. And the way the city's set up is the waterfront is at the edge of the city. You got to go through the city to get back to the town where we live, right? So we end up leaving this waterfront about the time the bars close because, you know, having a nice time. And obviously, all of us not in the best position to be drinking at this point in time in our lives. So we decided to take a less traveled road back home, stay off the main roads, you know, try and avoid a little bit of traffic, a little bit of trouble. So along these back roads, obviously in this city, the municipality hasn't been keeping up with the quality of the roads as well as they should have. So we're driving through the hood, and all of a sudden you hear a little boom, boom. And what do you know? You hear that little boop, 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 boop. It's our back tire, splat. My buddy who's driving pulls over to the side of the road. I'm like, what you about to do, man? We can't stop here. You got a couple people outside already watching us, sort of checking to see what's going on. I was like, we can't call for help. We can't call our parents. Man, we got to keep it moving. I don't know why you're even trying to get out the car. So needless to say, we rode that car on the flat tire all the way back through the city. Back home, because we wasn't stopping for nothing, wasn't waiting for help. And then the morning when we all woke up and his parents saw that he had a flat tire, we all acted like we didn't know what happened. But needless to say, we were also going to stop in a town that once had an article written about it. Welcome to blank, murder capital of New York.
Let me look up the
capital of New York.
Ah, I found the town. I don't want to like out my dude because apparently he's like working to keep this a secret. But no, it seems to be real in the field over there. Yo, so about this town. Quote, starting with a spectacular raid in May 2010, authorities have indicted over 100 alleged members of the two dominant gangs in town, the Bloods and the Latin Kings. Y'all got this place got enough going on that you can lock up 100 Bloods and Latin Kings and there's still 100 Bloods and Latin Kings left? Wow. I had no idea. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You're going to give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.